Audi.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hello and welcome to the Big Travel Podcast. I'm Lisa Francesca Nand. There are times when travel is just pure fun, and Cosmopolitan magazine travel editor Amanda Statham has made the fun side of travel her life's work. She's dived with sharks in the Galapagos, tracked rare animals on night safari in Costa Rica, danced at sunrise in Trinidad Carnival covered in mud, and spent a rather enviable amount of time sitting at New York City rooftop bars sipping cocktails at sunset. Amanda Statham, Glossy Magazine's travel editor, honeymoon expert, happy camper van owner, is on the Big Travel Podcast. I think it's really funny that you don't think you're interested. When you travel, what is, like, to a lot of people, a completely dream job. You know, this is, like, more interesting than many things.
It's an amazing job. It is. It's a lifestyle, I think, isn't it? And you, when you're at the nitty-gritty, when you're writing features at your desk at, you know, 11 o'clock at night, or you're doing the school run, that doesn't seem glamorous or interesting.
But from the outside, it seems glamorous. And, you know, particularly working for a magazine like Cosmo. How long have you been doing the job for?
About 14 years now. Long, long time. And I started because I was freelancing for them. And their travel editor, Paul Gogarty, left, who's a great travel writer and author, and he'd been commissioning me, and it was just one of those things where he'd left and they had about 6 months of no travel editor, and I think they realised, actually, we really need somebody. this is ridiculous. All the emails you get from PRs and invites, and they needed someone to go through it. So they contacted me, and I said yes, and that's just from there. So I've been with three editors now, all very different. All really inspiring women, so good to work for, like Sam Baker and Louise Court, and then Farah Storr, who recently left to go to Elle, and just brilliant.
You know. And how's it going? I don't know if I want to ask this or how much you'll tell me about it, but, you know, magazines have been in trouble a bit, haven't they? And I was devastated with the loss of Marie Claire,
yeah.
But Cosmopolitan seems to be going, you know, reasonably well in the circumstances.
It does. It really does. But I think they've been very clever, and they've really, they've made themselves, I think they call it 3D now. So you have, it's not just your mag, it's also your website, it's events. So it's such a good, solid brand that women trust, that I think they do venture off to other things, and that's working. And I don't think if you have a really strong website, I mean, they have millions of uniques. If you have a really strong website, that doesn't mean people don't buy the mag, interestingly. In fact, it seems to strengthen both. So, yeah, touch wood. It's doing very well in a very difficult market.
Well, that's what I like to hear, because I used to have a very expensive magazine habit. I think I used to buy all of them. I probably spent about, when I had no other, like, great expenses apart from travel and work things, probably spent about 50 quid a month on magazines. I get all of them.
I was the same.
Things have changed, but it's really nice to hear it's going from strength to strength, you know, and people are embracing different, you know, ways of doing it, like events and online stuff, and
there are awards of exactly video content. Yeah, it's, you know, you just have to, don't you? I think you have to run with it. That's what's happening. And if people want to read it on their phone, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, does it? They're still reading Cosmo. I don't think print will die. I think there were all those worries, but actually, it was funny. I was talking to my friend's 13-year-old the other day, and she was saying, actually, I think it'll be like vinyl. I think there's a return. And it was really interesting speaking to a 13-year-old girl about actually holding something And you know that feeling when you were younger that you were just talking about, you know, that hasn't gone. And even though she has an iPad, she still wanted to read the mag as well. So
I always say this to people about podcasting, because it felt online in terms of audio-visual stuff. It felt that video was the future for a long time. And one of my cushiest, a bit like your job here, but one of my cushiest jobs was for Sky.com, when for 3 years I had to create online travel videos from all over the world. And basically I had a confirmed commission for anything I wanted to do. So I could just go anywhere, and which is probably a bit like how your job works. And I'll get to that in a second, because that's what you're here for. But it felt like that video was going to be the way forward, and that audio was going to take a back seat. And audio has just gone from strength to strength.
Absolutely.
People have underestimated the power of having something to take with you.
Yes.
And you can't always watch a video or a film when you're on the move or on the train or, you know, working. And, you know, audio is really sort of fitted in very successfully into that slot.
I agree. Definitely in radio. It has, hasn't it? You know, especially for travel. I think sometimes it is lovely to just sit there and let your imagination run wild, isn't it?
It is, and indeed. And so let's start doing that with you. You were worried that you've forgotten some of your best travels, which
I'm sure they're in there somewhere.
To me, it's a great worry to have.
That's a very lucky worry to have. It's just that they go back a long way. And obviously, if you're traveling like 12 or 14 times a year, you do remember them. And a very good way of remembering that I find is to go back through photographs. I really enjoy that now. And the moment you see something, the whole trip springs back, and you remember the incidents and, you know, the fun things on there, or the one or the highlights. But yes, I think when someone just says, where's the best place to travel to, it's like, oh,
I know. I never have an answer to that when people say, where is the favorite place, your favorite place you've been? So I'm not going to ask that. Where is the most cosmopolitan place you've been? And I mean that, and I don't mean that in a Cosmo way. I mean in the actual magazine, because it's luxury in a way, isn't it? But it's affordable luxury. It's not sort of unattainable luxury.
No, not at all. I think that it's very obvious, but I think New York and Cosmo magazine go they just go hand in hand. Like, we seem to do that almost every year, because it changes so much. It's exciting. It's got some fantastic hotels that don't cost the earth. You know, you can go there and have a rooftop pool and a brilliant bar, and you're not playing at the kind of London prices, like £500 a night. It's just exciting, isn't it? It's quite cheap to get to. Like, Norwegian Air, I think, they've transformed that. That's incredible that you can get to New York for something like £300.
I flew for the first time to New York, for the first time with Norwegian a few weeks ago, and I was really impressed. I went economy on the way there and got upgraded, thank you to the people at Norwegian, on the way back. And I was so impressed with all of it. It was all modern and new and clean and really easy. And like you said, like 300 quid.
Absolutely amazing, isn't it?
So what's your favourite things to do in New York? Because I know you've written guidebooks about New York.
Yeah, I have. I like discovering new areas, actually. So like, next time I go, I think I'll go and try and discover... I haven't actually been to Williamsburg, really.
I was there a few weeks ago. Yeah.
So especially because of the guidebooks, so it was always more sort of, you know, Manhattan Island. And so I'd like to discover a little bit more around it. We touched on Brooklyn. And I am a sucker for rooftops. I just think there's the ink. What's it called, the ink? I'm trying to remember the name of the bar at the top. It's just absolutely incredible.
What is Ink Hotel?
It's in Hell's Kitchen. And you don't have to be staying at the hotel. So there's a lift on the side. I think it's Ink 49. And you can go up to the top, and in the lift, it opens up, and then it's just ridiculous. Like, Manhattan's there before you, and then the river's on the other side, so you've got that, and at sunset, this place, oh my God.
And you're drinking a cocktail.
It's just, you're drinking a cocktail.
And you've got the dream job. Does it feel like you've got the dream job when you're doing it? Do you have to pinch yourself?
I still know it's the best job in the world. And it's really interesting if you're talking to friends who... you know, they might be earning a lot more, but it just doesn't matter to me. It just doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, because it's not the best paying job in the world, journalism or...
No, but I think you can make it pay. You know, you can if you're canny, and I've got a few different jobs travel editorships. Cosmo is my main one, and that's the one everyone knows, but I have quite a few, like Women's Health, like magazine.
I love Women's Health. I used to subscribe, actually.
Very, very
good. Maybe I should renew that, but I really enjoy
it. You definitely.
Yeah.
and you know, I used to specialise in sort of honeymoon travel. So I, for example, I've just done a huge feature for The Telegraph. So 50 best honeymoons in the world. That's coming out in February. And you can, you know, you can make it pay.
But you can't, the experiences and the perks, you cannot buy that. You literally
you
could
can't.
Not, and you were, unless you're a multimillionaire, you could not
you just
buy
can't.
All
and
that
it's,
travel.
And it's the amount, isn't it? So you're not looking forward to sort of one holiday or two holidays a year. It's kind of, it's like every month. And I crave that. And it doesn't, I'm definitely not just a luxury traveller. I don't actually mind where it is. And that's true. My husband knows I'm as happy in a kind of camper van. Like, really, I am. As I am in a kind of five-star station. It's all good, it's all travel, and I like flying. When people say, oh, you must get really bored of that, but it's like, no.
Well, I never used to like it at all, but since you and I both have two young boys, and since becoming a mum, my travel has dropped back a bit, in fact, because it sounds like a really middle-class problem, but we bought a house in Spain, and it kind of meant that every holiday we were going to, and still are going to, the one house in Spain. I know, it's like my heart bleeds for me.
It
is, it's lovely. But I've just started to go further afield now for work. I was in Ethiopia last week, New York the week before, and Italy the week before as well. And actually, the long haul flight on my own was it was like a spa day.
I know.
You just get to sit there and have people bring you food and drink and watch films.
You can have a glass of red wine. You can watch the films that you haven't been able to see.
Exactly. Motherhood has totally changed the way I view long haul flights on my own. I haven't done that many with the kids.
That's why. Yeah, I always did, but even more so now. I love it.
Where have you felt most relaxed when you're on these trips? The destination.
Oh, that's a tricky one. I really still rate the Caribbean. I don't think it's as fashionable as it was, and you know, people desperate to go east. But I think for, you know, a 7-8 hour flight, for just relax, just chilled, you know, there's no hassle there. You can sort of have great food for not much money. The beaches are incredible. The water's really warm, especially with the kids. That's fantastic.
We love stories on the podcast. Could you think of a standout moment in any particular destination in the Caribbean?
I can. I've got a few.
Go on then.
Definitely, this is not so chilled, but it definitely Trinidad Carnival. And we started crazy hours in the morning. I think it's about 3 a.m. It was really, really early in the morning. And we just covered ourselves in mud. Everyone was just slathering mud on themselves. And then we got some rum punches. And we literally danced as the sun came up behind some floats. But we had feathers. We did the full shebang. Carried on dancing. And then I always remember we ran into the sea to get the... I can't remember where we'd been taken. We ran into the sea to get all the mud off us. And then we finished with kind of red stripes and just dancing with everyone in the street. And it was amazing. Like, I know Rio Carnival is the big one, but honestly, Trinidad Carnival, just, it's worth going for that. And then you can add Tobago on as you'll kind of chill out afterwards for that week. And then my other favourite in the Caribbean would be in Jamaica, which obviously is kind of one of the most well-known and touristy, and people can be a little bit snobby about it sometimes, which I just don't understand. I think it's amazing. The people there are fantastic. And we stayed at this place called Jake's.
I've heard of Jake's. It sounds amazing. It's really fun. It's where Kate Moss used to go, didn't she, all the time?
Yeah, I think people still go there. Like, I thought Caroline Flack was there at Christmas a few years ago. And but you wouldn't know. It's not celebby. It's not, you know, it's not like that. I think they probably go there because it's so tucked away. So it's on a place called Treasure Beach. And I've been there a few times just because I like it. So I've been with work and we've paid to go. It's got a little pool, which is all mosaic. So Sally Hensel, she was the designer behind it. Her son, Jason, now runs it. It's a real family concern. And it's like Gaudi on acid. It's the only way to describe it when I've written about it. There's mosaic everywhere.
Gone around Parkwell on acid. Not me, obviously, but I actually do know people who know what that is like.
So it'll be like bright pinks and then all this mosaic and then like brightly coloured bottles embedded in your bed, and you go out to your shower and it's got conch shells, and it's outside and it's got driftwood and conch shells, and you could kind of not, you can sort of be seen but not, it, the whole thing is just amazing.
And then, sort of be seen in your shower?
Well, you can't, it's kind of that level, you yeah. know, so like you could wave to fishermen.
So up to your neck. But they
yeah, exactly. It's proper outside. And then just a great restaurant with local food and local people come in, which is so important. So you're not tucked away. There's Jack Spratt's. You come out of the gate and walk down to Jack Spratt's, and there you can have like your jerk chicken, and that's a proper local cafe, but it's kind of affiliated. And they do, I always remember they do film nights. So I was there with my oldest son when he was much younger, and he was just playing with everyone on the grass, or we were watching a film, you know, beneath the stars with a beer. Absolutely amazing. But the story, I've digressed, the story was,
honestly, I'm sitting here going like, almost my whole body is crying out to be sitting on that beach,
yeah.
drinking that beer.
And it's, and it, I think rooms there from about £60.
Amazing, seriously?
Yeah, no, really. And there's a hostel I went to cover for The Guardian across the way, and that starts at about 20. And it's nice. So you could, you literally, I'm not talking about the kind of place, it's like you're if people are listening going, oh yeah, but it's not bad. And then, but the story behind it was, so we they said, you must go to Floyd's. It's like, okay, well, what's that? And they said, it's this bar. Okay, brilliant. So we went to find Floyd, who turned out to be a fisherman. And he said, yeah, you can come. So we went in a fishing boat, little wooden fishing boat, for about 15 minutes out to sea, and Floyd had built a bar on a sandbar in the middle of the ocean, and you could have red stripe or rum. You walked up these rickety steps, and it was made from kind of old mangroves with a thatch roof, a couple of guys playing dominoes. This is in the middle of the sea, and then your food was what he catches. It was the coolest place. Anyway, we stayed like all the afternoon. We stayed into the evening, and he said we were one of the latest couples that had ever been there. And everyone kind of had their... Everyone was smoking, and it was amazing. And then, this is what I love, he was saying, yeah, we've had some really interesting people through here. It's like, oh, who? It's like, oh, what's he called? Who's the guy who, like, really famous, Fresh Prince?
Oh, Will Smith.
Will Smith! It's like, what? He went, yeah, he came by here. And a few others, it was just
brilliant. Oh, my God, that just sounds amazing.
So Floyd's Bar. I guess it's still there. Apparently, a couple of times it's been washed away.
I was going to say, could it be washed away?
Yeah, no, it has been. It has been, and he's rebuilt. But
people aren't on it.
No, I don't, yeah, no death. But I just love
that. Puts a downer on
you'd this. Have to know about him and where to find him at Treasure Beach, and just. But if anyone's thinking of going to Jamaica, you have to go down there.
I've been listening to a lot of Bob Marley recently. Something I haven't done for ages, but because my kids are singing. Three Little Birds at school for a performance.
Oh,
I know, it's so sweet. But so we've been listening to a lot of Bob Marley,
yeah.
And I have been craving that sort of beach bar experience, you know, with some music, with the cold beer, with the sand.
Well, Sally Hensel, who designed Jake's, her husband Perry was part of the kind of group that helped discover Bob Marley. And they took us for a tour into Kingston, yeah. And they were behind The Harder They Come, the film and the music and that whole era. Yeah, really, really interesting. And they chat to you about it if you're interested as well. So,
I'd love to go to Jamaica. I haven't been for some reason. I don't know why it hasn't come up. I've got a friend who runs a charity that does a lot of work there. And she's always saying, you must come over. Well, yes,
yeah,
I don't have enough time.
Do you know the really interesting thing is, I didn't think I'd sit down here today and talk all about Jamaica. But then, yeah, that's embedded in my mind is just such a wonderful place where I was so happy and as you say, relaxed.
Where did you think you'd talk about?
Oh, I don't know. I suppose.
Because everyone on the way thinks, right, I've got that story.
So true.
Yeah, go on.
That's so true. Well, I think because when people say, where's the best place, which is, as we've already said, that's incredibly hard to answer, isn't it? Because there are, you know, many sort of categories in your mind of what's the best city and best beach. And I suppose the most wow press trip, that is the one that I would never be able to do again. Does that make sense? So it was the Galapagos, which is obviously a once in a lifetime. But on top of that, it was with Céline Cousteau, so Jacques Cousteau's granddaughter. And it was to launch a charity called Shark Count.
with Contiki, and Contiki are they arrange tours for kind of, I think it's like 18 to 34, but it's not your booze cruises. There, it's really good, and they have a very strong sort of environmental charitable arm to them as well. So they're always supporting causes, and this was one that they were helping to launch. So they invited some journalists out as well, and we got to dive in the Galapagos with about 40 hammerhead sharks at Kid Rock, and we were part of the
first...
Sorry,
you didn't just say with Kid Rock, did you?
No, not with Kid Rock.
I was going to say, because that would really top it up. What was he doing there? It just sounded like it for a second.
And we went to count these sharks, and... which was terrifying, yet absolutely amazing. You know, I'd only done about 10 sharks in my whole life, 10 dives in my whole life. And to be doing that was that, my God, it was incredible.
She was meant to come on the podcast, Celine Cousteau, and I had to, she was here for the World Travel Market, and I had to cancel because I was in hospital having a blood transfusion, totally random for anemia, but I had to turn her down, and I was desperate. I was thinking, can I postpone my blood transfusion? I really want to meet her, because she lives somewhere far away. I don't know. Actually, it might just be France, but she doesn't.
France,
yeah.
and the US.
Oh, right, yeah. So she's not always here, but next time she comes, she's definitely really keen to be on.
Oh, amazing, and very inspirational woman as well. You know, the things she's working on, and as well. Again,
the whole family.
We talked about that. Yeah, exactly. So that was, you know, that was unforgettable. I mean, how incredible! And then the tour afterwards was there was a pro surfer, a female pro surfer from Australia that they'd invited to come with us from Margaret River, and we went surfing with her. She was doing a photo shoot and also surfing, and at Tortuga. So I like surfing. I'm not very good at all, but I enjoy it. So we went out. And then we had to all run in because there was a shark, a massive shark, kind of just circling near us. So that was it was incredibly exciting and also absolutely terrifying.
A bit rubbish if the PR team lost a journalist to a shark attack.
Lost their pro surfer. Because she was Aussie, she took it. I was like, oh, yeah, it's fine.
The thing about these press trips as well is that I think people don't know behind the scenes when they read a travel article. Often it sounds like you're there, you know, sort of on your own. And some people are there on their own. Yeah. But one of the great things about travelling for work like that is that often actually you're with a bunch of like-minded journalists, some of you who know already, and some you've just met that day, but it ends up like a very posh school trip where you all end up a bit giddy and everyone stays up late drinking and getting to know each other, and you know, by the end of the night people are dancing on the bar, and you know, because these people are trying to show the best of every aspect of their country and their hotel, and they're just throwing all the best things at you, and it's
absolutely
good fun in that sense.
It's great, and I definitely used to go on more group trips, and I think especially when you start off, it's not why you do it, but it's such a good way of making contacts. And some of my really, really great friends are people that I met at the beginning. There was a press trip I went on to Positano, and it was when I was on You and Your Wedding. I was the travel editor on You and Your Wedding.
I think you commissioned me for a couple of videos online. I don't know if for You and Your Wedding. Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
This is a long time ago.
That's
probably the dream job actually, because it's all honeymoons, which is hilarious. But this was a group press trip, and we'd been invited to sample this 7-course breakfast in Amalfi. And it was a kind of aphrodisiac menu and included oysters. So I think it was about 7 journalists had been flown out. And in the afternoon, we became sick one by one. So we all got food poisoning apart from one journalist who hadn't had the oysters, so clearly. And we basically vomited through the night before flying home. And one journalist, Wendy Gomesall, who was at the Mail at the time, couldn't fly home. She was so ill. She couldn't. It was a PR disaster. And then Nikki Grio, who's a Mauritius expert for The Telegraph now, that she was on the trip with me, and we're still just brilliant friends. I think it cemented our friendship, because you could literally hear people vomiting next door in this kind of beautiful hotel.
Did you write anything up about it? Because no one else is going to say, are the places that you refuse to write about?
It's so, so rare. But no. And I think the good thing with us was, at the time, was that it wasn't... in a wedding magazine, it's not a negative thing. People are buying it because they want positives and recommendations and good ideas. that's why they're buying it. So no, we didn't put it in. We just didn't run it because that's not fair to readers. Actually, it is. I've been back since, and it's a fantastic hotel.
And it's just one of those things.
A bad batch of voices. However, if you were paying whatever it was at the time, like £150, that's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially if you're on your honeymoon. So no, we just didn't put it in, and they fully understood. But the great thing was, I remember getting back, and we'd kept in touch. And the letter that came from the hotel was, they thought it was the winding Amalfi Roads.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because we'd been on a trip in the afternoon. Isn't that brilliant?
Just all get violently past it. I had one place that I never wrote about in the Maldives, and it was because we were just eaten alive by mosquitoes. Right. It was an eco-resort. Probably about, the villa we had would probably be about 10 grand a night. It was really lovely with your own private butler. And they'd spray every evening. I don't know what it was, but it didn't seem to do anything. And so, you know, there's being bitten by mosquitoes, which you get, you know,
everywhere.
And being bitten by what felt like killer diseased mosquitoes, although they weren't diseased. You know, we didn't have anything weird afterwards, but they made you feel sick. They were so sore and painful. Yeah. And I was like, look, I'm really sorry. I can't write about that. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, travel writing, I think, is very partial. Yeah, because you do say the good things. But I think it's nice to know that, you know, if something does go wrong, you're not going
to
gloss
know,
it over.
No, or does it go indefinitely? I say that if there's something, especially in Cosmo, no, you can absolutely say that it really isn't. But hopefully, normally I'll have done my job and the PR will have done their job, so that by the time it gets to the press trip, it's perfect for us and we know it's somewhere that would be good. Does that make sense? Because it is important. That I remember another one where it was for honeymoons, actually, again in the early days, but maybe I wasn't so on it, but it was a group press trip and I'd been sort of sold it, and it did sound wonderful. And I got there and it was just swarming with families. It was
on a honeymoon. Oh my God,
so
no
unromantic. Yeah. And I don't think it was a holiday type of year. It was like, oh my God, because you could choose anywhere in the world. Like, you can't recommend that. That's ridiculous. If I was in a Riyadh up the road.
Yeah, you would not want to turn up to your honeymoon and have loads of kids there. I'm sorry. And now, as a parent, have your travels changed? I mean, I'm not just asking you this because you're a woman, because I hate that.
Yeah.
But I do, because I do ask it to men as well.
Yes.
But have they changed?
Yes, of course. Yeah. But then I have a mix. I'm very, very lucky that I can do both. So I'm trying to, especially when my eldest son, and I hadn't had my second child up until school age, then I tried to take him on most of my trips. So they weren't family trips then. They were trips for Cosmo or trips for, you know, Telegraph. But I asked PRs if I could take him, especially before you have to pay for their flight from 2 onwards. But before then, they were like, well, yeah, because it's no extra money. And so he's travelled all over. And consequently, I like to think it's had a really positive effect. I'm quite very pro this. I've written a few things about it now. It's travel for kids is just so good. And his teachers have picked up on it. But what I would say is, and people might be listening and think, well, that's all right for her to say, but I don't just mean abroad even. I'll just try and take him to interesting places that I'm going to or thinking about going to. Or, you know, we've been on holiday for a day up the coast. We have, in our camper van. It's still travel.
Absolutely. I feel the same.
In the woods, it's travelling.
Yeah, just outside your house, you know, is still travel. It's just exploring, isn't it? And I feel exactly the same in terms of showing the kids stuff. Like my kids, my 7-year-old has been told he's not like great at read and writing compared to some of his peers. But wow, does he know stuff?
General knowledge.
You know, museums and all the museums that are free in London that we go to and sometimes bunk off school to go to. And, you know, I'm hoping the reading and writing will come.
But what you're giving him is invaluable. I think it's wonderful, isn't it? And also that mind-blowing thing, if the world doesn't just revolve around your kind of tiny community, that's amazing, isn't it?
It's such a valuable lesson. Do you ever feel like, I know you probably, like I do, follow a lot of full-time travelling families on things like Instagram, and actually my husband doesn't, and I can feel the sort of differences in us when I'm thinking, should we just take off and do this? Or should we go and live in our house in Spain for a year? And he's like, it's not really practical with work. I'm like, sod work, you know, we'll make it work somehow. Or just, you know, rent out the house and travel the world.
Oh, we've discussed that so many times. We've discussed that so many times. Well, it's kind of the same thing. I would do it. And we've got this, our dream is to send the kids to green school in Bali. And I went to Bali last year and I got a tour of the school. And I don't know
what green school is. What is
it? It's an international school on Bali with a huge focus on the environment. I hope we talk about a bit about the environment later, because it's really on the agenda at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah,
increasingly
it's difficult to square that circle when you're a traveller as well.
Completely. But I think there are ways of, you know, and we're looking at it, and even what you run in mags, it can have a contribution, kind of just being aware of it, and slow travel and the green school is sort of looking at environmental leaders of the future, I guess, alongside English, math. They still do all of that. You don't leave with nothing, but the focus is on being green. Even their school bus runs by sort of cooking oil, and it's not hippy dippy. It's
a proper school.
I went on a tour to see what it was like, and I know someone who sent their child there for a term. And the kid really wanted to stay, obviously, because it was fantastic. Even the architecture has won awards, so it's made of bamboo. And it was little things they were talking about, like when boys kind of reach, a certain age, like puberty, they give them a project to do. So as well as all your normal lessons, I think they understand that maybe they need another outlet. So there's a really rickety bridge over this river, and we asked about it, and he said, oh, that was one of the projects. The boys were involved engineering and, you know, woodwork, and it was so impressive.
And would you send them there or go with them and spend a term?
I'd love to spend a term. I'd love to go out there and actually try it out and just see. Again, as you're talking about, you could rent your house out and go out there, and you know, it is fee paying, by the way, but it's nothing compared to fee paying here. I don't fee pay here, and I'm not about to. But it's you know, you do have to pay a bit. But then they're very inclusive of the local community, so they have a great thing where there's quite a pollution problem in Bali now. So if local kids help to collect sort of a lot of rubbish in the area and they bring it in, it's weighed, and then the amount weighed can be exchanged for lessons or like art or English, or so no money's exchanging hands, but they're actually including people locally in this. So it's not just a sort of, we're an international school and you're nothing to do with this. They can come.
Amazing. It sounds like your school should be doing exchanges with them, you know, like I'm thinking about my school in southeast London. You know, that it'd be like some sort of exchange would be amazing.
It'd be fantastic.
You know, when the kids get older, maybe.
Yeah. But have a look. And things, you know, they all have sort of their own little patch of garden, and it's just, it's working with sort of nature and what's there rather than what we're doing, which I'm not entirely sure about at the moment, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure about it.
It seems like the working world has completely changed, but schools haven't working towards that. Does that make sense?
It does. It absolutely makes sense. And I think that's the thing about travel as well, is that you're exposed to so many different ways of doing things that you actually almost think, well, that's possible. You know, that's not impossible for people like us, you know, other people to do. You know, people sell up stuff or go and live somewhere else cheaply. You know, that there's things that you can do if you have the desire. Obviously, you need the means in some way. There's means, you know, you need to get plane fare, but you need to live there like you need to live here. There's just ways of, if there's a will, you know, there is sometimes a way.
Yeah, definitely. That's how I feel at the moment because obviously I'm sure you're aware as well, and it's everywhere, isn't it? Instagram, and so we're talking about the environment all the time. And, you know, my husband is a real environmentalist, so he's got some reclaimed forests, which he's mentioned for woodland that he looks after and tends, and they plant a lot of trees. And, you know, we are, but then obviously that really doesn't sit well with me flying around the world. It doesn't, and I'm fully aware, and I'm trying to work. I am trying to work. So I'm started carbon offsetting with Forests Without Frontiers, who do as they say. So like every pound donated is a tree planted.
So you do that. So carbon offsetting is where you, for how many miles you go on a flight, you will pay a certain amount.
You can work that out, or you can just make one-off donations. So it's like I just been to Costa Rica. So I actually did sit down and do that as a directly afterwards. And then we went to Italy this year, but we were in the summer, but we were there for quite a long time, about 3.5 weeks, and we were moving round. And we could have flown to some of the places, but we took the train instead. It was a lot longer, but it was really, really cheap and really good fun.
It's a great way to travel as well, train, isn't it? It really is so nice. I mean, you do have to have the time.
Yes,
but we never hire cars. I never hire a car when I'm abroad. I always rely on trains and buses, and even when we go down to Malaga, where I've got the terrible poor me, it's got a house there, and you know, has to go there all the time. Don't hire a car. My friends there think I'm mad. It's like, what do you mean you're gonna like get the train? It will take you like the whole day. And I'm thinking, that's the fun part.
And
you know,
and kids love a train.
Yeah. Or we've got like little scooters, and they scoot everywhere, and we don't need to hire a car. Okay, if you need to get somewhere in a hurry, if you're going to work or back, you don't have the luxury of doing that. But if you've got the time, it's such a cliche, but the journey can literally be part of the experience.
I think it is. You know, we've even run stories like that, and we're running one in Women's Health next year. So that's exactly it. The journey is the holiday, which it can be, you know, especially cycling and things. That's the way forward. And also looking more at the hotels and resorts. I mean, I think resorts have changed so much, haven't they? Hotels have changed so much. They are aware now. And I don't really care why they're doing it. I've had this argument with someone recently. You know, okay, so they're kind of not washing linen and towels, but they aren't. So that's fine. Whether it's financially saving money or whether they're being green. It doesn't matter, does it? It's the fact that they are. And it's the fact that they, you know, it's like, okay, we now know people are going to write on TripAdvisor about our plastic straws, so we're taking them off. Well, good. It doesn't matter if they're doing it just reactionary. It doesn't matter, does it? We're all in this. We've all got to do things.
Do you feel the whole Instagram thing has changed the way travel works?
Yeah, like 100%. To the extent where, you know, these surveys that you must get through saying people are booking here because they've seen it on Instagram. It's completely changed. People are getting travel tips on there. But I love Instagram. I'm not a print journalist who's going to be negative about, you know, social media. It's changed things, and blogging has, and I get all of that. And I think it's great. I think there's room for everybody. And Instagram's it's fun, interesting, and I found it very friendly.
Yeah, I found it friendly. It's always very positive, isn't it? Well, I think in the world of travel, it's very positive.
Exactly. I don't know what fashion, beauty, whatever, but in the world of travel, it's great.
But it has fueled over-tourism in many ways, hasn't it, as well? And that's another problem that, you know, as well as the environmental issue, and of course, over-tourism and the environmental issues have a big crossover.
Yeah.
But apparently, you've got these places that people... Where's that fjord in Norway? I haven't been, but there's a fjord that everyone stands on this rock and looks like they're alone on this in this beautiful, you know,
there are
landscape.
People waiting to
there's
come
people
in.
Queuing, literally, you know, people taking tickets. It's like a queue going down, a bit like that queue up Everest. Oh my God! Yeah. Oh,
and the wings in LA.
Yes, I have.
That's the same. There are people queuing around the corner.
Yeah.
Oh, against the pink wall with the wings. It's hilarious. But the good thing, or not the good thing, but the other side of over-tourism, which we will be running a feature on next year, is the exact opposite. So that's now a trend. It's like the second city. So, you know, like Chicago rather than New York, or it's the same thing. So it's finding the place that actually no one is there. Nobody has been there. Very, very remote places, or places where you're getting authentic experience, you know, and I think that's great.
Definitely. And a trend I've seen online as well is people to actually show what it's really like. So they'll show the nice, the amazing, you know, they'll have people hire dresses, like particularly in Santorini, they like Instagram girls will go on photo shoots where they've hired these dresses and, you know, hire someone to do a photo shoot when you're on your holiday. But anyway, and then the other people will go, well, this was the queue and this is how it really looked.
You know, I
love that. Yeah, and actually expose.
But
that.
We all know. I think if we can try and understand Instagram. It's one side. I'm not going to say it's fake. It's one side of people or their experience, isn't it? And it's great to look at these beautiful images. But as long as we understand that behind that, often, you know, there are the big queues or the problems or they've, you know.
I'm going to use my biggest travel writer hate right now, because one of the, you know, when you're in the business yourself and you look for, and you think, if I see hidden gem, it makes me want to punch myself in the head. So I'm going to ask you, recommend me a hidden gem so I can punch myself in the
that's
head.
That's easy. Libalula, where I've just been in Costa Rica. So because
I've heard great things about Costa Rica.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm definitely going back. I think that's always a good question. Where would you pay to go yourself?
Yes.
You know, not where you will be.
Where
you're being paid
to
go. Yeah, it's. I would pay to go back to. Well, I will pay to go back to Costa Rica.
To a family holiday.
Flash. don't know if I can afford that.
Pay on your own. Yeah.
Maybe one of them, I don't know.
Whoever's the chosen child of the moment.
Yeah. I think my eldest, because I think you're really going to appreciate the wildlife, and there are some quite scary things to do there. We went on a night safari. Oh. And we saw a jacarandu, and they're, you know, like a kind of tiny puma, and they're incredibly rare. And the guide with us hadn't seen one in that area for 6 years. So we're there standing on this swing bridge in the canopy of the jungle, and we've got our head torches on. We're watching this cat move through the trees, and I mean, honestly, it was. And then as we were celebrating, we thought, we've got to go to the bar to celebrate with a guide, the Moscow, our guide. So we all got down these kind of Indiana Jones bridges through the canopy. And just as we got to the end, I nearly put my hand on a snake. True story. And I have the picture of the snake. And it was annoying because all the way around, I put my sleeves over my hands because they told us, like, don't. And because we were chatting and we were sort of, you know, high.
On the way to bar.
Yeah, yeah, high on life. And I was just about to put it down. And it turned out not to be poisonous. We identified it back in the bar on my camera, but it was so
funny. My 7-year-old would want to clutch you and say venomous.
Venomous,
it's only poisonous, apparently, if you eat it.
And he's right.
But I didn't know that before. I would have said poisonous as well. But yeah, the kids.
Absolutely.
And which is why it's such a great place to take to the kids. So what is the hidden gem?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so Nibalila. So that was on the coast, and it was actually run by a Brit couple. So they went out there a couple of years ago and found some land. They sold up everything here, so it's different to us. You know, we were talking about renting out houses, and they've sold up everything. They kind of drove through Central America, and they landed in Costa Rica. They had two children and thought, this is it. They've got great schools. The standard of living is actually quite high in Costa Rica, and good schools, good international school. And so they settled on the coast, and they bought this land. And they've created a kind of huge outside dining area, and they've got four luxury safari tents that are, it's like £60 a night, I think, to stay in. And you have, again, an outside shower. And
you're like a fisherman watching
You wake up in the morning and you just sit there, and you can have your cup, like, proper cup of tea, because they're British.
Yeah, you need that. I take my tea bags.
But you sometimes
take tea bags with me. It's my only thing. If I'm going away for a long time.
Yeah, and then just watch. This is only a few weeks. I was watching hummingbirds just outside my tent, and lizards, and their garden that they created is just. It's huge. It's like being in the jungle. It's completely private, and that was just heaven. I feel like I could stay there for about a week. You know, we were only there for two nights, but we just instantly relaxed. It was so, so chilled.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
And you felt like you could ask them anything, you know. I'd actually arranged a few things before I went. So we went out on a catamaran to see the dolphins and whales, and which we did. We're very lucky. But you felt like they would organise it for you. You know, that sort of thing. You could just sit and ask for recommendations, and then they'd say, yeah, that's our favourite restaurant down there. That's our favourite. If you ask for that cocktail in that bar, they'll make it for you.
That's exactly the sort of thing you want, isn't it?
Yeah.
Exactly the sort of thing you want.
Really, really good value. And also to just sit and chat to them. So it's, yeah, Libalula.
Libalula. Well, look it up. I've been speaking to you for ages, so we're going to run out of time. Just before I ask you my last couple of questions, we've talked a lot about the positive sides of travelling so much for work. Are there any downsides?
When you have children, of course, because it means you are missing family time. And it would be silly to say not. You know, I still think I spend more time with my children. I'm very lucky because of my job, than a lot of working parents who don't go away for chunks of time, but they're constantly working. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
I am constantly working, but it's flexible, so I can work from home, so I can do the school pickup, or more for me is school drop-off, you know, there to make tea. And so I don't feel that I will be there at the nativity. So I'm very lucky, and I don't want to beat myself up too much about it. And it's not very often. As I say, I try to take them away, and I try to work around school holidays as well.
Every working parent beats themselves up, though.
But you do, and you can't not. You know, I did a kind of 9-day trip with Travel Guru TV. I don't know if you've heard of them, but we did a bit of filming, and it was an amazing opportunity to Grenada, and it was also really well paid. So it would have been madness at that time not to take it. But my son's like 12 months old. you know, and I was away for, I'd stopped breastfeeding, I couldn't have done that. But it, yeah, God, of course, I cried frequently and looked at lots of pictures. But, you know, the really lovely thing now is that my eldest son, it really knows the payoff. So if there are a few times when he's very good in general, but if there's a kind of, you know, even you're not going to be in there to tuck them in that night because maybe it's a press event, which is still very important to go to a press dinner or a work thing or a deadline. And I'll say, but mummy has to do all this. And then where are you going? Like, we're all going to Jordan next February at half term. Do you know? And he's old enough now to know, like, yeah.
I'm going to Jordan for the first time in February without the kids for a few days before half term.
Oh, before? I was going to say, we might be there at the same time.
No, no, that'd be amazing. Before half term. And you know what? We got for two adults, we got EasyJet return flights for £300.
Yes. And do you know how much the kids' flights are? Because I'm paying for the kids' flights. There, because I have a big issue with this, there is $19.99.
Yeah, mine was $16.99 on the way back, but then once you put the taxes on.
So that's less than a train to London.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I'm sorry.
EasyJet.
That's outrageous.
Akaba, I'm going.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's exactly the same.
I mean, that's
how
like
funny.
Jordan is like a posh, you know, far away destination.
It's exotic.
It's,
like,
it's exotic.
It
the word is. $19.99.
I
can't wait. I'd love to take the kids
crazy.
There, but in the meantime, can't afford it, have to go without them.
Well, this is very lucky. But he knows now.
Yeah, he appreciates. How old is he now?
He's eight and my youngest is four. So, that's
same
what
as
I mean.
Mine,
So obviously there are the downsides. And that's, personally, I know travel journalists who do sometimes have a little moan about all the actual travel. And it is tiring stuff, but I'm not going to because I quite enjoy it. The journey starts from sort of going to the airport, so I actually don't mind that. I'll take. I once went to like Rarotonga, and it took about three flights to get. It was something crazy, like 30 hours, and via New Zealand and stuff. And I actually didn't mind. I was pregnant as well. It was really restful because I wasn't too far gone.
You just got to sit,
and it was so restful. Yeah, I think I'd needed like a bit of a just to chill out a bit.
How many countries have you been to now?
It must be about 70, I imagine. 70, 75.
I think Simon Calder is on about 150.
Oh, I'm so far behind Simon Calder.
He's racking them up on the phone.
That's amazing.
When Simon's out the country,
I
get the call, actually, for TV and radio travel experts. So he can carry on travelling as much as he likes because he gives me
You're the female Simon Calder.
Yes, I am.
That's fantastic.
I'm his unofficial understudy is what I've been called, or stunt double.
Yeah, 150, that's fantastic.
It's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah. Although, we have, in our playroom, we have a huge map of the world, and we all have a different colour sticker. So everyone, when you've been on a trip, we put them on, and I double dot a lot. It's really gutting. So you're like New York, you can't put it on again. But you're really, I need to start. And also, it's quite funny on our map because a lot of our stickers are, you know, we're clearly very equator family. There's not too much.
Not too north, not too south.
I mean, there are some things, but it's quite clear. It's very funny.
Warm weather.
Yeah. We've obviously gone towards that rather than. I took my son to the Arctic a couple of years ago there.
Amazing.
That was. But I got a school fine for that.
Did you? Did they fine you?
I sent
the bastards.
Yes. For the first time, I wrote a letter about how educational this trip was going to be.
And I thought, right,
because it was for a week. And it was
weird. He's meeting Father
it's
Christmas.
Like 10 international journalists and their children. So every night, everyone was sitting. Everyone had been invited to take one child. And we, every night at dinner, they were the best.
At Christmas.
The best behaved child. And so I was sitting there. Different countries and languages, and we did ice fishing and made igloos, and it was incredible.
And they find you.
And they find me.
So I've got to ask you, we're being hurried up, so I'll ask you my last question. My last question is always about music, because I think music and travel go very much hand in hand. And the question is, if you had to pick one song that reminds you of a special moment in travel, what is that song, and describe the moment? Where were you? What were you doing?
No, I got so
I know, it's so
music.
Hard.
Oh, my goodness.
Have a think.
Oh, God. Do you know what? This is going to sound a bit pretentious, but it was the most incredible trip. Actually, not a press trip. We paid for this. And we went to the Fez World Music Festival. which, can you imagine, just for a second, imagine how beautiful that is. So like ancient Riyadh, they'd put gigs on, and we saw You So Endure. Do you remember he sang with Naina Cherry?
I do. Always, 7 seconds.
7 seconds.
Yeah. But
she wasn't there. She didn't wander on her. But we were in the main square in Fez, and it was at sunset, and he came on and sung that. And God, I even feel goosebumps now. It was unbelievable. We were just standing in this like multinational crowd, and just it felt his voice was so beautiful, and it kind of echoed almost around this Medina. Oh God, it was amazing. I have so many. And then, yeah, I went to see Jack Johnson in Hawaii.
Perfect place to see Jack Johnson.
Oh well, cool. He's a Hawaiian boy. Exactly. We saw him at the Shell stage, and just him singing his like banana pancake and things, but actually in Hawaii, just acoustic with a guitar. It was at the height of his fame, so you'd expect it. You wouldn't have thought it'd be paired back, but it was. So we just got to sort of sit and almost felt like hang out with Jack Johnson on the grass in Hawaii. So I think that is up there
amazing.
As well.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. I could talk to you forever, but thank you so
you
much
too.
For coming on the Big Travel Podcast. Maybe have you on once a year to talk about next year's travels.
I've loved it so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Amanda, and thank you for listening. Coming up, we have BBC foreign correspondent Humphrey Hawksley, some episodes from my trip to Ethiopia the other week, and a Christmas special.